Welcome to the Revive Her Drive Mastery Interview Series. I'm Susan Bratton, the creator of Revive Her Drive. And on this month's interview, you're going to get to meet Deborah Annapol. Deborah has a PhD in clinical psychology, and I first became aware of her because I read two of her books. She's the author of Polyamory in the 21st Century. And if you haven't heard about polyamory, we're going to tell you about what that is and what it means to Deborah. She also wrote an absolutely beautiful book that we're going to talk about today called The Seven Natural Laws of Love. You're obviously a part of the Revive Her Drive membership program because you're trying to get and create, give and receive more love in your life. And I've never read a better book about how to have more love than Deborah's book, The Seven Natural Laws of Love. She's a relationship coach with a PhD in clinical psychology. And she teaches a method of relationship and sexual enhancement called pelvic heart integration. We're going to find out more about that. And perhaps you might even have the lucky opportunity to go meet Deborah in person at one of her workshops. This year in 2012, she'll be in Australia, England, Portugal, New Zealand, Denmark, Italy, and the United States. So if you have any opportunity at all, please go to lovewithoutlimits.com. Get on her newsletter. It's always interesting. And get more in touch with who Deborah Annapol is. I know you'll want to after you get to meet her. So let's do just that. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you.
All right, darling. So the first thing that I want to do, well, I've got a series of questions that I want to talk about, but I really wanted to go back to one of the things we discussed in the introduction to you. And that was this method of relationship and sexual enhancement called pelvic heart integration. Would you just give us a bit of information about what that is?
Okay, I'd be happy to. You could call it a form of Western Tantra. And by that, I mean it uses processes and maps that are culturally familiar to modern Western people to address the central questions that can be seen in Tantra and other embodied spiritual paths. So it doesn't require that you learn about Hindu culture, which I happen to like, but that's not really the core question. Instead, the pelvic heart integration engages us directly, not just intellectually, in working with the union of masculine and feminine, finding how we can create this union inside ourselves so that we project out a state of harmony and union and attract that to ourselves rather than having a conflict or division inside ourselves between the masculine and feminine and then acting that out with the people in our lives. And pelvic heart integration essentially works with liberating the free flow of life force energy in the physical body, in the energy body, in the emotional body, and actually back through the generations of our ancestors. So it's very deep and profound work and very powerful.
What is it, something that you do as a couple? Is it something that's a solo? Is it meditative? Is it massage? What is it?
Well, all of those things. You can work together with a partner, but it's also, because it's essentially inner work, you don't have to do it as a couple. And it works on all the levels simultaneously. So it works on the level of the body with massage, including genital body work, to release the tension that most of us carry, not only in and around the genitals, but the thighs, the back, the belly, all the places we hold sexual tension. It works on a psychological level with our imprinting, our beliefs that usually we've acquired from mom and dad. It works with the meridians, the acupuncture meridians, with the breath, on many different levels at once.
I noticed in the Reclaiming Desire workshop, which was the workshop that I recently attended with you and Dossie Easton, you talked a lot in Reclaiming Desire about getting back in touch with your own body. If your desire's gone missing, that a good way to generate that desire, once you remove whatever obstacle it is that's keeping you from feeling that desire, which could be any number of things that are not operating well in your life, that a way to start to stoke the fire of desire is to get into your body again. You talked about breath work, and you said you like the practice of hatha yoga. I also heard between you and Dossie talking about the idea of, you know, feeling yourself and your desire more, that it was really auditory, visual, and kinesthetic. You know, Dossie liked to read graphic novels. There was talk of tango dancing. You know, there were a lot of different ways that people could find their desire. What do you have to say to add to that or explain it better than I have in posing the question to you?
Well, the first thing I'd say is that desire really lives in and is felt through the five senses. And so if you're living in your head, as so many people are, you can have an idea of desire, you can have a fantasy of desire, but unless you bring it down into the body, you're really just imagining. It's not embodied. It's not real. And our life force energy, that is the sexual drive, the libido, which is designed to be very, very strong to ensure that there's an urge to procreate. Now, we've since found lots of other reasons or motives for sexual expression. It's way beyond just simple reproduction, but the force that moves us to desire, to want, is essentially felt in the body. So if you're not in your body, you're cheating yourself. You're missing it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's funny because what I tell the Reviver Drive guys that are in the process of reconnecting intimately with their woman is that you start with romance. You start with her heart and her head right away. Before you start with anything body-based, really just reconnect with her. Put your attention on her. Have some playful fun together. Get her to remember what it was like, the reason she first wanted to be with you. And get that masculine-feminine energy happening again. But very soon after that, when she's starting to realize that you're not the big dud she might have thought you are, and really, it's not always that, of course, but the next thing is to bring pleasure into your lives, both hers and yours together every day, especially focusing on the senses. And, you know, it's beyond foot rubs, but things like putting a piece of chocolate in her mouth that's, you know, really exquisite, just getting her back into her body in a lot of different ways using all of those senses. What are some of the ways that you might recommend a man deliver that kind of sensation to his woman in a non-overtly sexual, more romantic, more sensate, more sensual way? Any little ideas that you've recommended over the years?
Well, yeah, before I get down to specific recommendations, I'd like to back up just a bit.
Sure.
And talk about two things. One, that for everyone, but especially for the feminine, she has to feel safe before she's going to be interested in going in a sexual direction. She really needs to have a sense of safety and security and trust. And so any agenda to seduce her into a sexual experience is going to make it difficult for her to feel the safety and the security she needs to start opening up. Now, once she starts opening up, then seduction may be welcome. But until then, it's felt as a demand, even if it's not expressed that way. Now, a good way to move away from that and to contact the natural curiosity and excitement that every woman and man is born with is to go back to a more childlike place. And you talk about being playful. And children don't need to be taught how to play. They know how to play. All species, the young are extremely playful. And so coming into a place of childlike innocence that is body and sensually oriented, that is just enjoying the beauty we can see through our eyes, enjoying delicious tastes, enjoying music, enjoying different sensations on the skin, not with the intention of creating arousal or getting to sex, but just in a playful, natural, appreciative way, brings a woman into a place of feeling safe and innocent. And this is the ideal starting place.
Thank you for that. And I have an entire module on trust and surrender. And we cover it in a lot of different dialogues and discussions. But I'd really like to hear from you, because you've worked with thousands and thousands of couples over the year, both in your private practice and in your workshops. What is it that makes women feel safe with a man? And what is it that, and is it different for men? Do they need different things to feel safe?
Well, men and women have a feminine side and a masculine side within them. Now, in most women, but not all, the feminine side is stronger. And in most men, the masculine side is stronger. But for a man to contact his inner feminine will really help him to understand what the feminine needs to feel safe, because it's the same for his feminine and her feminine. And for the masculine, the safety is important, but I think more important for the masculine is a sense of competence and success in the world. Many men that I've worked with who are struggling in their career or with their finances, this really negatively impacts their sex drive. They seem to need this sense of success in the world in order to feel sexy. This is less of an issue for women. For women, the safety has more to do with a sense that she is honored, that she knows that she's not going to be pushed or manipulated or violated, and that she doesn't have to do anything, that she has some space to just be. No demands, not even a demand that, you know, she respond.
Yeah, that makes sense. One of the things that I really appreciated about the expanded orgasm practice was that it required the woman to simply receive, and that she didn't have to do anything. She just had to be whatever she was in that moment. I found that particularly freeing. It wasn't until I was 45 that I even learned that it would be okay to just receive. And I think that that makes a lot of sense, the idea of women being honored. I do wonder, though, a lot of men really take care of their wives. They do a lot of things for her. She doesn't have to do a lot herself. And yet they also seem to be unable to make this intimate connection with her. So they get very frustrated because they feel like they're giving her all this space and taking care of all of the fundamental needs of the family, earning the money, maybe doing more than they feel like is their fair share of taking care of the children, etc. And yet still she's not meeting his needs and his desire for the quality and quantity of intimacy that he wants. Where do you see that happen and go wrong in relationships?
So giving the space to just be and do nothing, and also being very deeply present with her. So, you know, the woman may appreciate all the things that the man is doing, but she may not experience him being present with her in stillness.
I'm sorry, were you going to say something else?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So when you say being present in stillness, that means something to you. But if someone heard that and doesn't have any idea what you're talking about, how else would you say that? What is that? What give a guy more instruction about how to be present and be present in stillness with his woman?
Okay, well, to develop the ability to really be present with woman, self, anyone, is probably best pursued independently. And there's, as I said earlier, there's a tendency for men and women, but especially men, to start to live in their heads, to be thinking a lot, and not to be really in the body, not to be aware of what emotions they're feeling, not to be aware of what physical sensations they're having, and not to know how to, what in Tantra we call it, run your energy. That is to actually feel the life force moving through your body. So if this sounds very mysterious to any of the men listening, I would suggest that one way to start getting a handle on this would be to study one of the martial arts, particularly the inner martial arts, things like Tai Chi, Qigong, Aikido is very good because it involves connection with another person. There are many ways to cultivate this sense of presence, but that's a good place to begin, especially if you're a guy that likes to be active, doesn't like sitting still, meditating, doesn't have an inclination to tune into their feelings. Martial arts is a really good place to start. It'll teach you all of these things.
Okay, I think that's helpful. And now take it back to, let's just say that a man is able to appreciate and be with his emotions and his body sensations. He feels his own life force and energy. He's grounded and he can be in the moment and not out in his head or someplace else. If he can get himself to that point, then how does he begin to be present for his woman? What is that like?
Mm-hmm. Well, one very simple practice that creates the connection and allows him to hold space for her to come into her body and be more present is for her to lie down on her back comfortably and for him to sit alongside her with a hand in the center of her chest and a hand on her belly and just to sit with her that way. Or they could spoon, they could lie side by side with him behind her and again reaching around with a hand on her heart and just lie together and breathe and relax. Now, this is something, you can do this as a way of going to sleep, but if you're hoping for something other than just sleep, I'd say don't do this when you're really exhausted at the end of the day, because you probably will fall asleep. Hugging is another wonderful way, not in a tight or an active or a hug. A lot of people, their idea of a hug is to really squeeze very hard, like in a bear hug, or to kind of like the guys do on the field, pat each other on the back. I'm talking about a different kind of hug in which you just bring the bodies together in complete stillness and breathe, kind of like the spooning, but you could be standing up and face to face. And for a lot of people, it's, you know, 30 seconds in a hug is too much already. And it starts getting uncomfortable because it is actually very intimate. And it takes a lot of surrender to be willing actually to just stay in the hug and not feel like you have to do something or that something is supposed to happen. But if you're able to just be there in stillness and relax into it, a tremendous connection can be created.
We forget the most basic things, I know. That's where you have to start. And for some men, if they wanted to give their woman a, you know, a present melting hug, they'd be met with a lot of resistance. She doesn't want to be touched because he's tried to escalate that so many times. And so for a lot of men who are really starting at the, you know, the bottom, if you will, kind of climbing up out of a hole of lack of intimacy for so many years, I often recommend that he goes and sits next to her and puts his arm around her and holds her while she's watching television. And then he just kisses her on the cheek and gets up and goes away after that and leaves her there. And after a while, if he does that for a few nights in a row, she's going to be waiting for him to show up with that hug, that non-demanding hug, while she's watching TV. And one of these days, that TV is going to get turned off, you know?
Yes, yes. I think you're exactly right on that. Another piece of it is, though, that, you know, for a man who has been rebuffed and rejected over and over again, it's very hard for him to show up not feeling like he wants or needs something from her.
Yeah.
And even if he's trying to not pressure her, and a lot of women are very intuitive. They'll feel his need as pressure, even if he's not really putting that onto her. And so for a man to find a way to feel full, to feel nourished apart from his woman, is a very important part of being able to show up in this non-demanding way. Now, the pelvic heart integration work teaches that, and a lot of the way that that's accomplished is through working with your own breath. And there's other ways to do this, but one way or another, and the truth is, you know, the man has needs and desires, and he needs to acknowledge that and find a way to meet those needs and desires so that he's coming to his woman feeling fulfilled.
Yeah, I got a really sweet note from one of my customers, and he said, he handwrote it and sent us a check, and he said, Susan and Tim, I wanted to pay more for your product. It's my statement to you that I value what you're doing and appreciate the support I've gotten in just the short time I've been a member. Today, I laid in bed next to my wife in snuggle mode for nearly half an hour. No sex. I didn't even need it. It felt great to not want, beg, plead. And, you know, it's, he says, now with Reviver Drive, it's given me the confidence that, I will have great sex more often in the right moment. The irony is that I now know it will happen. And that small fact enables me to wait and enjoy the other 80% of things that matter in our relationship. Thanks a bunch. I'm in delight. Big smiley face, Phil.
Wonderful.
So it is so true. Once you kind of let that neediness go, and that is a really, really, it's a big hurdle for men. I want to go back to one of the formulas that you taught us in your Reclaiming Desire workshop. And that was that desire, it comes from a combination of safety and risk, that both of those pieces need to be present. We talked a little bit about safety, actually quite a bit about how women need to be honored, not violated, the space to just be, to be very present with her. So if you could create that safety and risk, how would you typify that for a man?
Well, I prefer to think of it as giving the man permission to actually let his raw masculine energy be felt. Not in any kind of demanding way, but this is the risky side for a woman who's allergic to sex or afraid of sexual intimacy. It's very risky for her to just feel his masculine power, to feel his sexual excitement, not being directed toward her or demanding anything from her, but just to feel that. Now, we can get into all kinds of conversations and fantasies, ideas about what that might look like if it manifested. But the bottom line, I think, is this liberation of the male energy. Now, a lot of men have been taught, probably first by their mothers and then by their wives and maybe many other men and women along the way, that it's not okay for them to be sexual, that it's not okay for them to have an erection, for them to want. And it's a fine distinction, an important distinction, to create permission to feel your desire, which is actually there, and then to not need anything to happen as a result of it.
Okay. I want to think about how would a man express that raw masculine desire in a way that what would he do? What doesn't make him seem needy?
Well, the word containment comes to me. Contain that energy, to allow himself to feel it, enjoy it, allow it to show up in his body, in his facial expression, in his eyes, for him to give himself permission to allow his energy just to penetrate out into the world and not need a response from her, not need her to approve of it, to be turned on by it, to respond to it, to spread her legs, but just that he has full permission to let that energy move within himself. Now, I think when you wanted to talk about risk, perhaps, you know, that's taking it the next step into a conversation about what fantasies he has, she has, fantasies that are a little edgy, things that maybe you'd want to do under the right circumstances, that are exciting, but that are maybe not something you've ever done before, or not something you do every day, something a little out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I also think another word for risk that's a more of a baby step, if you're saying that desire is the balance of trust and risk, or safety and risk, you could also potentially say it's the that risk could be variety or novelty. It doesn't even have to be an edgy fantasy. It could be something that feels really safe but is new, like making love in a different place, but doing it the same way. That provides both safety and risk, right?
Yes. Yes. Good example.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I know that for so many men, a lot of the... before I go to that, I want to talk about desire and I want to link it to passion. And one of the things I really heard you say loud and clear is that if you want to create more desire and feel more desire in your life, that in many ways, it's about feeling the passion for being alive. It's the desire for that life force and energy to come out. It's about your passion for living, for food, for music. It's not just about sex or love. It's about feeling desire to have a rich and evocative and wonderful life. And I think that if a man feels disconnected intimately from his woman and he's missing that love and that passion there, one of the ways that he can get in touch with his own emotions and sensations and feel his life force is to cultivate passion in other areas of his life that are going to make him more appealing to his woman than being stuck in the negative spiral of being upset about what he doesn't have. You please agree or disagree and add more to that if you'd like to.
Yes. I couldn't have said that better myself. And the thing is that for many men particularly, all of the passion gets funneled down into a single point, and that is sex, and if he's married, sex with his wife. This is a very narrow focus for what could be a very multidimensional passion for anything he's interested in, that he enjoys, that's pleasurable. And, we think of passion sometimes as being the same as sexual desire, but actually you can be passionate about anything you do in life.
Yeah, and a woman is going to be drawn to that passionate man.
Absolutely.
All right, now I want to segue. A man who is involved in learning about the tenets of, the elements of seduction and how to be a more seductive man and how to create that trust so that his woman can surrender, so he can hold space for her, so that he can deliver that passion and energy and connect with her. He is a man who wants more love. He wants more affection, attention, touch, intimacy, passion. He wants all those things. And for many of the men that I've talked to, I advise them to just start being little love machines, not sex machines, but love machines. Just feel love, take love from wherever it comes in your life and appreciate it. But mostly just start giving it out. Just love everybody. Love your postal worker and love your boss and love your kids and love your wife and love your friends. And in the loving, in the cultivating of, and the feeling that love for them, they're going to respond to you and that love is going to come back and then you're going to get that full cycle. I think for many men, they get shut down sexually and their love, they say, I love my wife, but I don't feel love in my life right now. So when I read the seven natural laws of love, it is essentially that you say that. I'd like you to say it better and describe the seven laws of love and explain how it's a big pie, a big ever expanding pie, and what those seven laws are.
Okay. Well, I think you've expressed it quite well, actually.
But well, you'll do a better job than I did.
I've kind of taken the essential wisdom from many different spiritual traditions to take a look at what love actually is. And, you know, one of the things that you said is that in the expressing of love, you feel the love. And we often imagine that we're going to feel love when we receive love, but it's actually in the expressing that the experience of love is strongest. And I encourage people to think of love as a vibration, not as actually a material object that could be given or received, but that it's like a radio station. And if you tune to this vibration of love, then you are, it's always accessible. Now, in many of the spiritual traditions, this is talked about as recognizing actually that you are the source of love. So it's not about trying to get it from outside. And although, and this is true in a sense, I think it's a lot easier for people that don't feel the love inside to relate to this idea of tuning to the station of love. And literally, you can listen to beautiful music that evokes this feeling of love. Or you can take yourself to a beautiful place in nature that evokes a feeling of gratitude and appreciation. And these are all dimensions of love. Now, another part of love that I think is really important, particularly maybe for the men that you're talking to, is what I call the law of forgiveness. And that means it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay for you to make mistakes. It's okay for people you love to make mistakes. Very few humans are really able to love perfectly. And when we hold on to things in the past that did not work out the way we wanted, we're really closing the door to that second chance of forgiving yourself and others and being open to, okay, the next moment, this now moment. What can happen now? If you're back stuck in what you didn't get and how it didn't work, you're not going to be available for the love when it does show up. You're going to be closed to it. Another really important law I call the law of truth. And you know, many of us have been taught if we want to be loved, we better not tell the truth. And you know, while there's certainly a time and a place to share things that may be difficult to hear, the reality is that the more you can be vulnerable and self-disclose, the more the people around you are going to be able to empathize and understand. And of course, you want to cultivate your own ability to empathize and understand others, because people can't help but respond with love when they're feeling heard. Most women, the thing they want most in relationship is to be listened to and to feel understood. The law of unity is another really important one. And this means that love includes everyone and everything. It doesn't take a position. And yeah, most of us have a lot of conflict inside ourselves. And then we project these conflicts out into the world around us. And it's so much more fun and easier to find the unity within, to resolve those conflicts inside yourself instead of acting them out with another. For example, some of the men who I notice have a complaint that their partner's not interested in sex, or she wants monogamy and they would rather have an open relationship. Often, if he leaves that relationship, he creates another one the same. Why? Because inside of him, there's a part that wants to avoid sex or really wants monogamy. And so if he's not resolving that inside himself, then he's going to end up struggling with his partner about it. I don't want to go on too long here. I think maybe those are some of the basic ones.
I would really encourage you, if you're listening to this and you don't feel like you have enough love in your life, to buy Deborah's book. It's a very inexpensive book. It's probably like $10 or $11 on Amazon. And it's a profound book. And Deborah is very good at breaking things down and getting underneath our common and limited beliefs and views about things as big as love. And I found it to be very much an expansive opening. It gave, even though I'm full of love and I'm loved by so many people, I'm oozing and pouring love out. I love all of my customers and followers and everyone I know. I'm just full of it. It allowed me to even have more capacity to give and receive love after I read that book. I know that it can, no matter who you are, it can make your life better. That simple book, The Seven Natural Laws of Love. And so I really encourage you to one click add that thing to your shopping cart, because that $10 can expand the benefit of your entire life from the day you get it going forward. And I'll tell you, if there's anything that you can do to reconnect intimately with your woman, it's to love her more. And anytime you can find a new ways of thinking about how to give and receive love, all the better. So I tend to not push things or tell people to do certain things or whatever, let people find their own way. But in this, I am firm and resolute. That book will add tremendous love to your life, just reading it and opening your eyes again to thinking about how you exist in your world and what kind of man you are and how you have a relationship with love in your life. So I want to go on to talking about polyamory, successful polyamorous relationships, ways that monogamous, heretofore monogamous couples might consider polyamory. It's a pretty bold move for a conversation, Deborah, because my customers are all over the world and they probably have never even heard this word. And what we're about to say, they could find it confronting. They could come from a society or a culture or a religious background that would make non-monogamy a very upsetting thought for them. So I want to frame this not as a recommendation, but as a thought experiment, as a way to open your mind to something besides what you're doing now that may not be fully serving you and your wife or your girlfriend. And so not a recommendation, just a consideration or a thought experiment. So does that sound like a good way to go with this?
Yes, absolutely.
Good. So why don't you talk to us about polyamory and what that is and what are some of the other words people might use and your perspective on it, how you define polyamory, so we get a very specific level set about the Deborah Adipol version of polyamory.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, because the part that I find is often overlooked, especially in the media now that it's becoming more talked about, is that polyamory, it means many loves, not many sex partners, many loves. And of course, some of those loves might include sex, but the concept is that rather than taking love and trying to make it fit your picture of what it should look like, that we realize love is bigger than we are and is there to show us what is the appropriate way for it to express itself in a way that is completely honest, consensual, open. So we're not talking about cheating. We're not talking about coercing anybody to do anything they want. We're not talking about do whatever you want, whenever you want. No, if you're in a relationship and you're considering including someone else in it, it has to work for everybody involved and everybody that's directly impacted. So it's actually a very responsible and expansive, inclusive way to allow more love in the world. Now, the reality is that there are very, very few people on the planet who only have attraction for one person their entire life. I would dare say there's no one who's only ever been attracted to one person in their entire life. And this is part of what causes desire to go missing, is that we have this idea, I'm only supposed to desire this one person because we got married or because we promised to be exclusive. And then the reality is that there's desire for other people. And that doesn't mean you have to act on it, but at least to give it space to be recognized and felt. Now, some people will be extremely jealous if their partner even looks at someone else. And, you know, there's a difference between always constantly checking out everyone else and just noticing, oh, there's a very attractive person. There's a very beautiful woman. There's a very sexy man. When one should cross your path. Now, perhaps you see if you're a man, perhaps, and you're a heterosexual man, perhaps you see every woman in the world as attractive and beautiful. Great. That means you're really passionate. And if your partner is experiencing your passion and your love and your focus on her, she's going to actually not mind nearly as much if she's getting what she wants from you to hear that there's other people you find attractive too. Now, if you've made a monogamous commitment, that, you know, that's needs to be very delicately renegotiated if you're considering changing it. But I'm not right now even talking about changing it. I'm just talking about making the space to acknowledge we have attractions to other people. And in fact, this is one way, you talked about the risk, you know, this is one way to try something new in your sexual interaction, not at the very beginning when you're trying to establish it, but some couples find that they really enjoy sharing fantasies about other people. Not all the time, but as a little spice. It's also been found that jealousy, which can come up, it's quite normal for it to come up when there's a sense of not being the only object of desire. But jealousy can also be used to bring more juice, more turn on, more passion into a relationship if it's held in a safe way. Now, let me go back to, well, what is actually polyamory? I said it's about love, not just sex, but yeah, it helps to have some pictures of what that could look like. And one of the most popular pictures for people is the open relationship. So a couple, married or not, who agrees that they're number one in each other's lives, and they also agree that they can include other people intimately, sexually, emotionally, in specific ways that they agree upon. And there's really 1,000 different sets of agreements that people could make about how to do this in a way that works for both of them. That's not the only way that polyamory can work, but I think that's probably one of the most popular because it allows that safe and familiar couple concept to come along into polyamory. But it could also be a group marriage of three or more people, or it could be single people who are intending to stay single but who have several committed ongoing relationships, including perhaps some with people that are married.
I think the most common kind of open relationship that might work in the particular case of my guy listening right now would be, because I'm dealing with men in general who aren't, in many cases, their wife doesn't want to have sex with them anymore. She's gone through menopause, she's done having children, she has health issues, whatever it might be. How could a man, let's just take this as a, you know, a use case, how could a man negotiate really openly and lovingly with his wife to be able to go out and have intimate relationships or ship with another woman or women or whomever, whatever he wants to do, and still manage to have his wife feel that there's not anything less in their relationship, and potentially there could be even more by allowing him to have his sexual needs met if he simply cannot bring her back to the sensual table? Is it possible, and how would you recommend a man try to embark on that possibility?
Well, I'll say first of all that that kind of scenario is most likely to work when the partner who is not looking to have another lover, not looking to have an open relationship, has a passionate interest in something. So there was one couple I worked with, the wife was a birder. She was passionate about bird watching. And she was actually very happy to have her husband spend some time pursuing another relationship because this freed her up to go on bird watching trips. I don't think it ever works with a woman who is either stuck at home with the children and resentful about that, or who's maybe depressed or has health issues and feels unsupported. So the first thing to suggest an open relationship to a partner who doesn't want one is to make sure that partner feels really supported and that they are developing their own interests, their own potential, which just might not happen to be sexual. The next thing, I think, is to make it really clear that he would love it if she would be open to deepening their sexual relationship. But to tell her, you know, if that's just really not something that you're open to, I'm a sexual person, and for me to be happy in this relationship, I need to find a way to express my sexuality. What would you suggest? And, you know, put it to her. Let her come up with an idea if possible. And if they have a good relationship emotionally, if they're good companions, and they have a sincere desire to support each other, it's entirely possible that if all that's in the way is some belief systems that she has that says you're not supposed to do this, that approaching it that way could get past those belief systems.
Okay. More?
Well, I was going to suggest that opening up the subject for conversation and assuring her that he's not going to act on it right away is another way to create the space to have some conversation, some honest conversation without a whole lot of fear that, oh my God, now he's going to run out and do this right away.
Yeah, and I think this is a really good time to talk about compersion and its relationship to jealousy, because I likely the first thing that would happen if a man was considering the possibility of opening a conversation to potentially negotiate some kind of sensual connection with a person outside the marriage, that's going to be his first concern. My wife will be jealous. She'll be excluded. She'll be upset. Can you talk about compersion and jealousy and how jealousy is a part of desire?
Well, the feeling of jealousy in the body exists only when you have a combination of feeling turned on, of feeling sexual excitement, and feeling fear, threat at the same time. And so the sexual desire, if it's not there, there's actually not going to be a lot of jealousy, at least not sexual jealousy. Now, psychology teaches us that it's always easier to replace one feeling or one behavior with another one rather than try to just eliminate the first one. Now, this is why people who are trying to stop smoking cigarettes may take up chewing gum. So compersion is the alternative to feeling jealousy. It's taking that excitement and choosing consciously to experience that excitement as a delight that your beloved is being loved by someone else, rather than resisting this and contracting in an effort to make it not happen, either by controlling your partner or having an emotional outburst. Instead, it's channeling those feelings into a positive feeling of, oh, isn't it wonderful that he's getting his needs met, that he's so happy about this. And some people call this altruism, not so much when it has to do with sex, but just generally the idea that you would want the best for someone you love and that you would actually put their needs ahead of your own sometimes is called altruism. And compersion is a variation on this that specifically has to do with kind of vicariously experiencing your partner's pleasure. Now, this is much more likely to happen if the partner who, say, is negotiated an open relationship, is going out to try it, and then comes home and brings the love, brings the happiness, brings the positive energy back home. If he comes home and he's feeling guilty and withdrawn or exhausted, then his partner may not see there's a lot of benefit for her.
Yeah, I would say playing that the bigger game, that if you're in it forever with your partner and you want to have that relationship and you negotiate some kind of boundaries around bringing another person into the relationship, or one of you having someone else, or one of you dating, or whatever it might be. I agree with you, bringing in the positive, bringing that back to the relationship, bringing your passion and your life force and your excitement and your enthusiasm can really give your partner a lot of pleasure, more so than being stuck in a relationship where you're both unhappy. And I like to think about it maybe not even in the terms of a polyamorous relationship or an open marriage, but maybe even more, I like euphemisms and words sometimes because I think they can they can move away from some specific prescribed idea. And I would like to talk about it as possibly an arrangement that a couple would create where the rules might be very different for the two of them. You know, the man is going to do these things and there's an agreement, and the woman is going to do these things and there's an agreement, and they're not equal. I think a lot of couples get caught up in the, well, if I want to go out and have sex, then she should do it too, because it's only fair. And a lot of times when I hear couples negotiating what their relationship is going to be like, they try to make it fair and equal to both parties, rather than to give each person in the relationship what that person desires of both the original relationship and any other relationships that occur. And so I like the notion of arrangements and lopsided thinking, you know, inequality, unbalanced rules, because then it seems like your bird or your lady who likes to go birding, freeing her up for time to go birding and giving him time to have that passion and sensuality is a perfect example of something that most people would look from the outside in and say, that's not fair. How come he gets to do that and she doesn't get to do that? Well, she doesn't want to do it. So what do you really want, and negotiate from there? Doesn't that make sense?
Well, it does. And I want to really emphasize, though, that I don't think it's fair in a relationship for one person, say the man, to say, well, I'm going to have permission to have other partners and you're not.
Oh, now, no, I wouldn't say that.
I just wanted to clarify
that.
Thank you. Permission doesn't mean that she wants to, or that she has to, or that she needs to. But if she wanted to, yeah, she could. But
yes. She
may not want to.
Exactly. And I think my point was, if she doesn't want to and you want to and she's okay with you doing that, then you're in an agreement that works. But one of the things that I like about the concept of an open relationship isn't that it's open and you can go do what you want. That's not what it means to me. What it means is that we're open to managing through the changes we're going to go through as we try new things in our loving. Do you know what I mean?
That's a great way to put it. And, you know, I love the arrangement concept too. I think that's a really good one. It sounds very European also.
Yeah, right. This has been going on forever. One of the things I really appreciated about your book, Polyamory in the 21st Century, was, you can tell you're a PhD. You've done a few thesis, you've done your thesis work and things, because I liked how there was not only a survey of cultures around the world today that have relationships that are non-monogamous, whatever they might be called, polyamorous, open, whatever, arrangements. so that there's a lot of that happening in the world today in many different cultures, but also that you talked about polyamorous relationships through the ages. So you got the horizontal and vertical axis of the fact that people have been negotiating these relationships for as long as there have been people in relationship. And I think that was a really important part of the book. Another thing, and this is a segue to my next question, probably the very favorite thing in polyamory in the 21st century was the chapter that you talked about, the polyamorous personality. What are traits that a couple and their lovers need to embody to successfully negotiate and navigate the emotions that occur when you're going against cultural and societal norms? And I'm just going to list a few of them. High self-esteem, an ability to multitask because you're juggling calendars, a love for intensity, an appreciation for diversity, high and strong communication skills, an independent streak, you know, you're not going to live your life the way it's been prescribed, a team spirit, again, that going back to the fact that you're always working in honor of your partner or partner's lives and making them the best they can be, a commitment to growth, which certainly every man who's listening to our conversation today, Deborah, is committed to growth because he's actively working on trying to make his life better. Sex positive, highly intelligent, and accountable, and flexible, creative, and spontaneous because stuff comes up because now you're dealing with more people. I loved that list. And I thought to myself, there are some monogamous couples could really learn from this list of couples who are not only negotiating their own relationship, but relationships with others in context of their initial relationship. And I'd like to pose to you, what are the skills and characteristics that, you know, out of this list or anything else that you think are missing in monogamous couples that if they put a little attention and focus on engendering or cultivating certain skills or talents or capabilities as part of their relationship could really help them have a better relationship? Monogamous, poly, anything. Where do you see the disconnect? Because you work with a lot of people. What are the things that people are just overlooking or getting stuck on that they should put some focus on?
Well, I think one of the difficulties for a lot of monogamous couples is that they lose the sense of having an individual self in addition to the us of the couple. And, you know, what I mean by this is that, you know, we have this idea that once you're in a couple, you own each other. You own each other's genitals. You have the right to tell each other what to do and what not to do. And I don't think this serves monogamous couples any better than it serves polyamorous couples. The more that there's a sense of autonomy, the more that we're actually open and available for deep intimacy with another. Otherwise, there's a fear of maybe getting lost in the other person or in the relationship. Now, some people who have a tendency to get lost, I think, are actually choosing polyamorous relationships as a way to avoid that or counteract that. And it can work, but it's actually much better to deal with that internally. So that would be one thing. Another is this realization that communication skills, the ability not only to talk, but to really listen to the other and not get caught in the loop that happens so often where one person says something and then the other person gets triggered and they're off and running in the same argument that they've had a million times. Learning to communicate for empathy, for understanding, and just stopping as soon as you see that it's going in the direction of an argument is something that monogamous couples, is any couple, in fact, you don't even have to be in a couple. Any human being can benefit by developing that capacity. Accountability is another one. You get into hot water really, really fast in polyamory if you can't be counted on to do what you say and say what you plan to do. But again, in a monogamous relationship, this is going to take it to a higher level. And, you know, you can skate in monogamy. You can be a little sloppy without the relationship immediately falling apart. But that doesn't mean that you should be avoiding being accountable or avoiding communicating well. If you want a passionate relationship, it certainly does not require polyamory, but recognizing that you want to cultivate your passion, you want to cultivate your aliveness, instead of going on automatic pilot is another important lesson from polyamory. And again, I've talked to couples who they actually use polyamory as a strategy to keep their relationship alive and changing and exciting. And there's other strategies. You don't have to use that one. But I think you do have to have an intention, because otherwise, especially in a culture that puts a lot less value on intimacy than it does on work and production, you have to really consciously cultivate your passion, your expansion. Otherwise, the relationship goes on the back burner, especially people with young children. Yeah, so many couples with young children end up not having sex. Why? Because they're not prioritizing it. Now, if they wanted to save money to buy a new car, they'd realize that they would need to do certain things. But somehow people don't realize if you want to create time for a really exciting sexual relationship, you've got to prioritize that. You've got to find a weekend that you can get away and have some spaciousness together.
I love those weekends, especially hotel sex. It's the best thing ever, isn't it? So we're coming to a close now, and thank you for that. Great advice. And I think one of the things that I would recommend is that as you listen to this, listen to it a couple of times, because I've found that when Deborah speaks, it all sounds very smart and of course, right. I know that. Yeah. And then if you listen to it again and you really survey what she's saying and her advice against what you're actually doing, you will find that there's a big delta. And it's in that delta between knowing what you should do and the common sense and the logic that you hear when you hear Deborah talk and what's really happening in your life. And so I really encourage you to listen to this more than one time, because what you will find is that there is great wisdom in this beautiful woman that you might be taking for granted in the first pass of the conversation. At least that's been my experience. There's a lot of depth and a lot of richness and a lot of experience in what she's saying. And the beautiful thing is that nothing that she's saying is difficult. Not only that, what she's saying is bringing pure pleasure, your life force, being present with your woman, being honest, being trustworthy, being accountable, forgiveness. These are just the basic tenets of the kind of being that you wanna be in your life. And it's just really nice to revisit them. So, Deborah, just as a last conversation, and this is just for me, this is my Susan Bratton greedy little question, because I'm just so in love with you and your work. What are you most interested in right now in your own life? What is it that's caught your fancy in your fabulous deconstructionist mind? What are you playing with right now?
Well, the idea of eco-sexuality has really captured me. And a lot of people hear this and they go, huh? What's that?
What is it, like green condoms? It's like paraben-free lube? No. Tell us.
Yes. You know, greener sexual products could be one part of it, but it's actually much bigger than that.
I'm sure it is.
It's realizing that our sexual energy, our life force, comes from the earth, from the air, from fire, you know, from all the elements, and that we're actually in a very intimate, erotic relationship with Earth, or potentially. Many people, especially if you don't spend much time in nature, outdoors, are cut off from this, but the capacity of nature to feed our erotic energy and the need of the planet to receive our erotic energy are really profound. And we've lost a huge amount by getting away from this understanding, which was common thousands of years ago. People lived closer to the land. They were very aware. Many people have maybe heard about fertility rituals that took place in ancient times to help the fertility of the earth and also to help the fertility of the humans. There's an exchange there. And so in the investigation and recreation of this erotic relationship with nature, with Earth, and not just Earth, but the stars as well, I find a tremendous excitement and interest. And it's kind of like some of the other aspects of sexuality that were either suppressed or ignored or forgotten 20, 30 years ago. For me, this is the leading edge, the current wave of that's rising.
Nice. Well, thank you. I'm gonna follow you closely. And the last thing that I want to do, I know that you have done a lot of work with couples and individuals about polyamorous relationships and also relationship coaching in general. Who can you help the most, and how can you help them, and how can they get in contact with you?
Well, I think I can help people the most who either are thinking about opening up a relationship and would like to avoid some of the mistakes that I made earlier in my life, and that would like to really get a sense of what's possible for them in their particular situation. I can help someone at the beginning to make their path a lot easier. I can also help people who are embarked on that path and hitting a rough spot to use that as really an opportunity for growth and greater intimacy, rather than having it be the thing that tore their relationship apart. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone who wants to use their relationship, whether it's monogamous or polyamorous, as a path of self-discovery and as a spiritual path, is someone that I can be very helpful to.
Great. And they go to lovewithoutlimits.com, and there's a form there for contacting you, right?
Yes, lovewithoutlimits.com, mm-hmm. Or they can email me, Taj, T-A-J, at lovewithoutlimits.com.
Okay. And you do Skype sessions often, right, from wherever you are in the world?
That's right. I do Skype sessions all over the world.
Perfect. Well, listen, I know you're going to have an amazing year, and I'm so glad that you're going to so many beautiful places and you're going to touch so many people. And I know that the thousands of men that you're going to touch by having this conversation with me today is one of the things that's made this, this day for me. I loved bringing you to my followers and fans. And so thank you so much for giving us so much time and so much great information. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate you and the work that you do in the world.
Well, thank you so much. I feel very appreciated. And as we know, appreciation feels great. So
all right.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to wrap up this mastery interview with Deborah Annapol. And I am your host, Susan Bratton, creator of Reviver Drive. Thanks so much for tuning in to this module. Take care. Bye-bye.